Here. Plasma tubes.
An alien hand.
An alien hand.
Oh, yeah.
An alien hand.
That's the thing that I liked about that, those people that were really, like, getting into the subjectivity and were like, we got to take a look at this or we're not going to go anywhere. Like, because they were like, the war on terrorism versus terrorism isn't anything. You got to look at what's under, like, you can't,
yeah.
At some point, somebody's got to look at what's going on
yeah.
underneath kind of all that, you know, the subjectivity of the whole thing.
Yes.
Which is the same as, like, that, you know, I mean, we just keep looking and finding. Nobody knows the implications because there aren't any. It's just subjective.
Right. Yeah, really. An alien hand,
don't
an
say
alien.
That at church.
Like,
there aren't any.
Right.
Guess what? Well, you've got a completely arbitrary meaning field. Yeah. The Earth is outgassing.
It doesn't go quite with the Earth. It's curved sharply.
It looks like it has joints when you look close up. It's like little finger joints.
Yeah. Nice. The whole bandwidth of meaning for so-called humans is an arbitrary assertion of implication and consequence, tethered, if you will, to all the superstitions and beliefs having to do with the startle moment of appearing in sentience, having a certain lifespan. Find anything that is not, you could say, co-opted or sucked into, right, an arbitrary assertion of implication according to what we say is, you know, the pinnacle of human consciousness. Now, that's the root of all superstition and belief. Because all superstition and belief is not an independently existing reality. It all filters down to what? The fact that it appears that you were born, live a life, and then die. So within the span of your, you know, your party, your nonstop birthday party, for the span of your life, it appears as if there's a reality. Or a million, it doesn't matter how many. And so all of the implications of science and arts, anthropology, sociology, ayahuasca, spiritual experience, samadhi, Hindu, Buddhist, Islam, Jain, on and on and on and on, fits where? Well, it fits within the neat package of the bookends of what you call your life, your experience. And then we insist that this arbitrary implication of what consciousness and phenomena and universes and plasma tubes are relevant to, right, this.
But in some way it is relevant, because it is all the same thing.
Well,
it's identical to what actually is.
Fair enough.
But when you put your little, when you're not open to just being in it, then you fuck it up. Kind of.
Okay, so whatever.
I'm trying to say, I get this.
If one's relationship with whatever this is. Adhere to this narrow bandwidth of the explanation, justification, and implication, including the influence of all of these superstitious and belief systems, then you tell me whether that's liberating or suffering.
If I would say it's suffering, but still, everything that appears can only be of one thing.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, the question is not whether there's a million things that could possibly be responsible for a million other things. Let's go with the we are all one, do the kumbaya, and get it over with. Right? Okay. Yeah. Well, right. But now we're looking at you could say the convenient or inconvenient behavioral or life implications of superstition and belief, of a misunderstanding of the nature of consciousness itself.
Yeah,
of course, it's got to be all one, no argument, you know, or we could say it's all two. It doesn't really mess it up. It could be all three. You know what I mean? It could be all a billion.
The relevance is relative, in a way.
That's the whole thing. You see, the frame in which I occupy my mind, my daydream, my presumption, my assertion, my wealth, my closet, my relationships, my joy, my sorrow, is all within, right, a kind of a myopic implication field of how I have been taught to cope with the bookends of my that occurs between my birth and my death. So everyone is completely, you could say, crushed. It's like the spirit is crushed by imagining that you have to accumulate or whatever you need to do between the birth and the death according to all the pressure that's been put upon you to succeed, to contribute, to be moral, to be immoral, to rise up in the church, to accumulate enormous amounts of wealth, to be altruistic,
right,
or to bomb your enemies.
Make your mark.
Right? Make your mark.
Be on the hydrant.
Yeah. And so within this myopic pressure field of arbitrary implication, you can see how much alcoholism and how much drug abuse and how much depression and how much medication. Thank you.
Right?
the sorrow of the species.
All right.
The sorrow of the species.
Can I get another piece of toast?
Indicated by, let's just say, what's in the news, even though the news is not really exemplary of what the hell's going on, is related to what? I mean, how did we become so violent? How did we become so violating? How did we become so competitive? How did we become so small-minded, right? How did this occur?
Well, and the same thing that's driving, like, an insane Catholic person is the same thing that's driving someone that bombs themselves for another religion or whatever.
It's the same thing that drives...
There has to be a level of honesty that someone can actually say that and be, like, transparent enough. You know what
yes.
I mean?
There's well, no... It's the same madness that drives the atheist.
Yeah, it's
or the
same.
Agnostic. You know, even if you don't strap plastic explosives to your body and then go into a mosque where lovely friends are praying. You know, this the implication of, call it conformist reality, even amongst multiple cultures over the course of, you know, however many thousands of years you want to measure, you know, so-called primate experience, all fits within, I would argue, this basic structural consequence of how we relate to or interpret the presence of consciousness itself. And what we have on Earth today, whatever Earth is, whatever today is, whatever we're suggesting can be reported in the news, is, you could say, the consequence, right? The organic outcome of a consciousness that mistakes itself for being corporeal and individuated. and at risk.
I see it more as just an expression of infinitude. I mean, it has to happen. It all has to happen. There's no other way. If it's infinite, then every expression has to be made.
Yeah.
And when you look at terrorism and whatever, then you're making a judgment. That is horrific. And
That's it.
Yep.
Well done. Thanks.
This is right toast, right?
Yeah, that's good. Okay. And I still need my potatoes and my orange juice?
Yeah, it's coming.
Okay.
Still getting over the party.
Don't you think, say, XYZ is insanity is, it's a judgment. It's just what it is.
Yes.
And in my small reform or whatever, my humanity, I'm glad I'm not, you know, in that particular pot, you know.
There's no year for humanity. I don't know. I was laughing at the in your humanity part.
Say again. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you ultimately, you have to find out for yourself, because any advice that anyone else gives you can only be an absolute hallucination. But at least if we're going to look at the literature, right? Whether ancient or contemporary, of human beings that don't mind claiming that they've woken up, whatever that implies, then yes, it seems that the nature of their revelation transcends the self-accusation of what we call human, body, mind, space, time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The kitchen is a little behind us.
That's what's been reported. Go to Ramakrishna, go to Nirsagadatta, go to Ramana Maharshi, go to Jeff Foster, go to Scott Killaby, go to Adam, go to Paul Hederman. I mean, go to any of the so-called, you know, living purveyors of awakened encouragement, or the historic ones, long dead, and you'll see a certain thread, which is, whoa, hang on a second. Whoa, consciousness is not the consequence of birth. Birth being the consequence of chatty bacteria that seemed to line the surface of the planet that came out of the seas, right, over the course of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years, for a complex, right, terrestrial life form to stand upright on its own calcium. They'll say, no. Consciousness, for lack of a better word, is the primacy of the permutation of all apparition, which includes universes and galaxies and black holes, neutron stars, and every other weird oddity that can be found, including, you know, plasma tubes. So you're shifting the you could say, from the awakener's point of view, there's a shift in loyalty from I, me, my, as body, mind, space, time, within, bookended by birth and death, trying to make my mark, however that plays out, right, to, oh my God, this is an unbreakable, unbroken unicity as a singularity of incomprehensible weirditude that refreshes, you could say, from moment to moment, but doesn't quite refresh because it was never really here in the first place. And the moment that follows the last moment is still not really here in the first place, because it's simultaneously evaporative as it is recreative.
And so, like, all of it is just one big high.
It's a total high. That's right. The entirety from a, let's say, street language, instead of being a word like Leela or a word like Brahman, is this is an LSD bender. Yeah. We won't want to use the Sanskrit or the Pali. Well, you want to use the contemporary English, not to be, you know, politically incorrect. This is a nonstop LSD bender. It has no author, it has no building blocks, it has no implication. It didn't come from anywhere. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't resolve into anything.
It has no meaning.
It has no meaning.
Well,
it has no meaning of a comparative manner.
Yeah,
it has meaning if you want to use the word because it's so. Because it's the best trip on the block.
So then, perceptive frequencies, sight, sound, touch, smell, taste, and then perception through those means creates a bandwidth of interest. And then that interest generates more of itself, in a sense.
I would say the interest creates the senses.
The interest. Wouldn't that be free body?
You're not even aware of them until you place your attention there.
Okay.
Isn't it?
Chicken and egg is being debated right now. So,
yeah, yeah.
So pre-body, pre-sensory input of all this.
That's right.
There was a dream or an imagining.
Well,
and then it became
the Bible suggests in the beginning there was the Word.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now that could be, you know, that could be homeboy speak, as in word up, or it could be interest. The Word, in the beginning there was the Word. If we go as subtle as we possibly can, the Word would suggest this is so. To then turn that, you know, that genesis or that beach, that seed, the Word, into then God went and did a bunch of stuff.
A name thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I heard someone use it the other day in terms of a manifestation thing, in terms to get money. So then you speak that you want money and you get it. I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Right.
Literally, Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
The secret.
Yeah. Nice. But that's a natural, let's say, symptom of figuring out how to make the best mark you possibly can between the bookends of birth and death. Oh, I use the Word, and I say money. Or I say whatever I say to manifest or attract something to me that has to do with creature comfort, that has to do with eros, that has to do with security, that has to do with advantage seeking of some kind. And so everyone is drunk with advantage seeking within the bookends of birth and death because they think that they're the body, mind, space, time. So advantage seeking is of the one, right? Kind of the organic outcome of that. So we're playing around with, just for fun, you know, we're lay scientists, right? We're lay explorers. We're playing around with the rethinking or reconsidering the genesis or primacy that this is so. What are the underlying presumptions that we make that have to do with this fantastic startle moment where it appears I, whatever that is, am alive, whatever that is.
Seats are good to sit on, and steps are good to go up and down.
Yeah.
A space is good to have things happen in, as opposed to being filled up with. But then, what's interesting then, if someone like myself might have a collection of spiritual insights.
Yep.
And then the room gets full in a way. Perception gets kind of busy.
Yes.
That's what I really like about meditation. That happens anyhow. Even in meditation.
Oh, sure.
Is the busy backdrop sometimes. And sometimes the backdrop is intrigued by the unfettered presence of who knows what, who knows how, and who knows why this, I don't know what to call it, some kind of peace and presence.
Yeah.
Even in the midst of the background of 8-lane highway.
That's right.
You know, and it does, and then 8-lane doesn't matter.
No.
It's just there. Oh, wow, now it's not there, and it's all bliss. Wow.
That's what we're playing with as a yoga, is the conscious, if not deliberate, uncoupling from fascination or interest in the story told by mind. In the hallucination, in the fabrication, in the abstraction of the story told by mind through name and form. If we're lucky to get a hint, the perfume, the felt sense, Are they successful, though effortless, right? Release from association or interest in this hallucination. What happens to the perfume of your being? That's, you know, for, let's say, the sake of a presentation to our dear Pebble Hill, the way of the open hand, because you had to call it something, that someone could go, I don't know what that is. Well, good, so we're on to, you know, start somewhere that no one, that it's a new thing that no one knows what it is. Otherwise, oh, he's going to talk about Buddhism or Hinduism, he's going to talk about, you know, it's like, no, here's this new phrase which just made up spontaneously, the way of the open hand. Okay, what's that? Now we can have a little fun. So we're actually dealing deliberately, constructively, with passion, with sorrow, with grief, with joy, with, right, emancipation, with everything we've got in here, right? With every cellular burst at our disposal, we're interested in uncoupling from the hallucination caused by association. And so here you are. Here is the beatitude of, call it consciousness, just here, just now, but without association, without the myth of continuity of self, without the presumption of space-time body-mind, you're the shit. That's what the liberators...
The uncoupling have. Allows you to actually see what's going on.
Yes, the uncoupling allows you to see...
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So then there seems to be a dance between an inherent relational desire and this unfettered presence that has need for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So the relational is always, well, we don't speak the same language, we're just going to make a bunch of barking sounds and look at each other strange. But if we have the same language, it's like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, let's have a conversation. Let's take that further to just completely being full or empty.
That's right. Full and empty.
I was just
gonna say, have no quarrel.
As soon as I said full, the empty is just as applicable. But
yeah,
no drive to connect because connection is already fully inherent.
It's done.
Something.
Absolutely done.
We don't have an agenda. It's not like a graspy, gropey kind
of. Exactly. When that state comes, there's nothing to gain or to lose.
Right. Yes.
Here it is. With or without even perception being clear or not clear. That isness is really interesting. I could be totally clueless in isness.
Yes.
I could be totally seeing the amazingness in isness.
Oh, yeah.
But somehow the amazingness is no more interesting than clueless.
No.
That's what's kind of
interesting.
Right. You're getting regular, right?
Because we're kind of hooked into, I got my diploma.
I see the line.
So here's
how I'm freaking blind. And
you can see that our default relationship with this is from the vantage point of subject or object as self, right? Self could be subject or object. It doesn't really matter. You could say interfacing, struggling with, supplicating, you know, the uncertainty of the beauty of life, hoping that I have more highs than I have lows. But if we withdraw, again, not willfully, but through, you know, the curious magic of insight, the curious magic of awareness, we withdraw from space-time body-mind, then full and empty have no quarrel. That would be in the literature, you know, the crack in the cosmic egg of duality. And we can see, we can feel that what's called time is an afterthought of the capacity to register, say, recall what we think are events. But the fact, and I use that word in big quotes, certainly around a table of physicists, right? But the fact is, whatever you can recall or register as the present moment has absolutely no duration, did not begin, and does not end. It's expressive and evaporative at the same, quote, time. So therefore, the implication of geologic time or clock time or psychological time is truly imagined.
Everything's imagined. like, I had this, just because you said the word non-duality, I had this moment the other day, I was lying in bed, and I'm like, I was listening to birds and my thoughts at the same time, and I'm like, I don't have any idea that there's a body or a bird or a separation between any of it, and it's just an imagination, because I imagine birds are outside, I'm inside in a bed, but I didn't, you know, my eyes were closed, it didn't have any actual, and I was thinking, fuck on duality, this is so dual, it's retarded. However, it's not, you know, but it is, because it was like the thoughts weren't mine, the birds, but it all is mine at the same time. Like, so it was so, I don't know, seeing something about that, how immensely chopped up it was, but the only thing that I really had going on was an imagination. And that was it.
Full and empty, having no quarrel, is exactly the same as mine and not mine. What else could it be but yours? But it's totally not yours.
Yeah.
And there's no argument.
Right, because any possessive instinct has to have a location to collect.
Yes, yes.
To collect.
Thank you so much. Any possessive instinct has to start with the imagination of a locus.
Yeah, that's where I had
and
to imagine.
And the locus is the bane or banality of duality. The locus, the genesis of this as a locus is the root of suffering.
Especially when the collection starts to fade and fizzle and fuzz out, like, oh shit, I don't remember. Where'd it go? I can't see it like I used to. It's like, wait a minute, where's this capacity originate? Right? In my collection? Or is that like backwash?
It's all backwash, baby.
Excuse those still eating. But,
yeah. I mean, if you sit in front of an interfaith congregation and say, friends, you're all backwashed.
The entirety of your life is backwashed.
Where are you going to go from there?
Here, let me demonstrate for you.
Yeah. It's not untrue, but the uninitiated, meaning those that have not taken the time to explore how weird this is, that's all I mean by that, the uninitiated will take umbrage. What? I'm backwashed? I mean, if someone accused me of backwash, I would hope that I would just have a great laugh, you know, bow, and say, when are you coming back? You know, can we talk about this some more?
Yeah, again.
Yeah, exactly. But most people will go,
again.
You know, run. Thanks so much. Run that guy out of town, you know, on the rails.
It's the same as sinners going to hell, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
No. People listen to that.
It is true.
You're all backwashed.
It is curious that those kind of things do get some kind of stickiness in consciousness. The fear, and then the preparation, and the bracing of, well, geez, if I don't believe in just the right way, man, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
So, like, how did I get...
All you can do as backwash is brace. We think we're so creative, you know? We're out there maneuvering for serotonin wins, right? Consummation wins. A great deal on shoes, right? The best restaurant in town where I can get the largest plate for the least amount of money, right? So, as backwash, I'm constantly on the search for a deal.
Did I just notice that they give you potatoes on
there? Oh, yeah, that's okay, though. You know what? I've been enjoying the potatoes, actually, a lot.
Okay, well, here's the sound if you still want it.
Thanks. I was actually thinking, you know what? I'm talking about potatoes. I'm enjoying them.
Don't listen to me if I order salad ever again.
That's funny.
Thank you.
You never know what you're going to get.
This simple, observable dilemma of, if I'm backwash, my fundamental relationship with living is going to be some form of bracing or advantage seeking. And the advantage seeking turns out to be just a creative expression of bracing, doesn't it?
Yeah, because then it would be like, you know, the folly of, ain't I great? Let me show you. Let me tell you about it.
A thousand ways.
Is the same folly as, I'm shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, do I really have the ability to assess accurately something that is freaking awesome beyond awesome in the sense of, I don't know.
Liberation, for lack of a better word, you could say is so deliciously untethered that it has no relationship to what we have mistaken as human. But most of us in search of spiritual succor want the discovery to be of value to me as a person, as a human. I apply the same kind of bracing and advantage seeking to spiritual pursuit as I do to a good deal on shoes. And that's why there's, and look at the proliferation in the marketplace, right, of advantage seeking through spiritual endeavor. Susan Duvall, maybe Pebble Hill, creating community. Every ashram, every yoga studio.
Think and grow rich.
Every self-help guru, Napoleon Hill. On and on. The firewalking guy, Tony, you know, Big Head
Robbins.
Tony guy, Tony Robbins. Yeah, it's like the whole universe is just a plethora of bracing and advantage seeking, converting spiritual experience into some kind of successful advantage seeking for the likes of me, bookended between birth and death.
So then,
and the accumulation of great wealth for those that are successful at selling it.
So then maybe you can go in the other direction and say, we're going to disintegrate.
Yeah.
So you think you got it together? Come and have it fall apart before your eyes.
So if everything
to a disintegrate retreat.
if everything is our imagination and we're all sort of one, that kind of explains why, you know, we see things differently. Like my, you know, you could flash a picture in front of us and then have in front of us describe it. It's
right.
It's going to be similar but very different in a way.
Ah, it's a penis and a vagina no matter how you look at it.
I only see penises.
I would
okay, all right, fine. I'm with you.
I don't see your conscious mind, Jeff.
I only see large penises.
Is that half and half down there? What just flashed before? Did your whole life just flash before your eyes, or just a whole bunch of giant penises? Yeah, pretty much the penises. All right, you're dead. What actually flashes before your eyes?
Sounds like Flesh Gordon shit.
Sorry, yes. So, yes. The way that each creature, so-called creature, filters impressions is unique. Yes.
Stick with penises. That gets everyone's attention.
I have enough minimal but enough science knowledge to understand that, you know, food is made of mostly calcium, right?
So, yeah.
But
and Elmer's.
You have to draw something, you know, to sort of convey that word means. Or
right.
To sort of draw something very similar.
Maybe, yeah, could be.
So I guess in our magic problem, because if we are, so to speak, all one, kind of like we're all this big plasma mass, right?
Nice.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Even the one you were given might not be the one that you want.
Well, I have to mix and match.
Really? You look down and you go, "That's
train.
Not me."
It's a train.
Not me.
That's not me. Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why I see both.
Yeah.
Secretly.
Secretly, I see both. Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
So we're all in the size of you of that. And
well, hang on. Yes, but it's nuanced. When someone says we are all one, that's just not the case. If it's we are all we. One is all one. It's not possible for we to be all one. It's either we are we or one is one. The two just do not connect. So there's no we. There's just, as you pointed out, the entirety of whatever this is doing what it does and the inevitability, apparently, of whatever it creates within the scope of so what we call human experience. And a plasma field, again, is lovely, But it's only, again, it's a rough metaphor that simply suggests you can't say what this is. See, plasma has no discernible boundary. You don't know where the ends are.
That's why I use that word.
Yes, good. So plasma and so-called one simply imply, you could say they're poetic forms for, I have no idea what this is. And as we relax into, I have no idea what this is, then space, time, body, mind, you open the window and they can actually exit that window. Now there's no longer any implication.
So if you take somebody,
not origin or consequence.
Who was raised in a very different way, culture, maybe from a very little safe scope.
Uh-huh, like us, yeah.
Throw into a dramatically different culture and way,
yeah,
like that, and say, oh, this is pepper, this is a pepper shaker. They're going to, like, be looking at it like, you know, and we've all experienced this, like, at the first sight of Garuda.
Yeah.
At the first sight of the pepper shaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? What is it? It looks like a bird. It looks like... Until somebody describes, I don't know, I guess I'm trying to say.
You know, landmark education, provides a very potent, you could say, introduction to dissolution of self or dissolution of belief. By pointing out and suggesting that what we call man or human, right, is a meaning-making machine, right? Meaning-making machine. And so if you have that encounter in your adult life, it makes you think. You begin to see that, oh, all the stuff I believe and invest in and view and interpret is a reflexive outcome of this being a meaning-making machine. So Landmark, like Course in Miracles, early on says, check this out, man. You don't really know what this is. Course in Miracles nor Landmark necessarily take you all the way to what we might refer to as liberation. Because in Course in Miracles,
like,
it seems you just...
Gross. I mean, I don't have anything with diseases.
In Course in Miracles, it seems you just keep ending up...
like, happy and ghost?
You know, going over these lessons over and over and over again, and then somehow dealing with what the accusation that you have an ego. I don't see it launch. I don't see the ascension in the Course in Miracles work. But just see the repetitive accusation of ego and the great pride that we feel when we have less ego.
Yeah.
The great pride that I feel when I have less ego. That's about it.
Irony.
And the same thing.
That's true irony.
We'll have to go tonight and talk to them about it. We'll go to the meeting and ask about it.
Subjectivity is really like what you kind of got to at some point look at, you know?
You have to go to the root of the myth of consciousness itself. You must. Because if you don't, you're going to hang out in some kind of permutation of being bookended. You're going to spin, baby.
Yeah. I see that.
I'm not saying spinning is bad. Spinning is wonderful.
I'm still doing it.
Yeah, spinning is wonderful. I mean, we have the Civil War, and we have genocide, and we have Monsanto.
But all
we have all these things to be thankful for.
All that is because people think they want to be getting something. And I'm not saying I'm above that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like,
everybody knows you're a go-getter.
I am.
You want to work, or you go with the spoon? Better to shovel that
spoon
way.
Spoon and a finger. A little pressure point.
We're all grabbing at something.
Like a shovel.
Yep.
Monsanto, you know, decided that if they have the corner on seeds, they have the corner on seeds and food, and, you know, they can control the world. You know what I'm saying? And,
yes.
You know, they can confess their seeds and your seeds and say that seed is their seed.
Chew the fuck out of the
ground. Yeah. what Monsanto wants is, I do the intercourse, but they have the orgasm.
Never mind how that interacts in your system.
Where we're aiming is to, you could say, play with the political field, play with the socioeconomic field, play with the corporatocracy, play with the misanthropic 1%, play with everything that is appearing on the scale of what we call our human experience, and watch it wind right back down, boom, to you, to this present moment.
The playing is good, and the ability, if you are not actually tethered to anything, to really enjoy, like, the subjective experience. It's like, whoo, you have the best of both worlds.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I mean, why was Ramana Maharshi smiling like that? Mm-hmm. Was someone, like, tickling his testicles underneath the photo? No, I think he was smiling quite independently. So you could say that he was enjoying the best of both or the best of a million worlds. This is disembodied euphoria. When it uncouples from the myth of mind and awakens to its own bright, radiant, unassailable nature, you're going to have a smile on your face, too.
It's like you can traverse. Don't do it, Dave. Run.
Don't do it, Dave.
Run away with the plates.
Run.
Run.
Take the plates and run. Go back to the cat. So this plasma, yes, of We Are All One, which is super, conveys, in your experience, you could say, a radically new, fresh, different texture than the typical myopia of mind conveys. Plasma as one, undifferentiated, undifferentiatable, unassailed and unassailable, conveys a different signature, a different texture in what you might refer to as your being, than by living within the incrustation of I, me, my.
So if we're... How do you explain then that my imagination differs from your imagination?
Why would I need to explain that? Isn't it sufficient that it appears so? Or does it really need an explanation?
My own imagination is different than my own imagination from minute to minute, so I'm not even sure where...
There's no quarrel between this or we are all one and the level of fractal differentiation that it expresses with, which accounts for varied imaginations.
Fractal differentiation.
Yeah.
So if a kid would say, oh, sorry, and what you change or something like that, or the plasma, the other one, it's like,
Fractal.
Or hologram.
So within, I mean, anywhere you look, let's say you have the capacity of locomotion, of, right, digits, including an opposable thumb, of a hindbrain and a midbrain and a neocortex, which is capable of profound abstraction and a really hot chess game, right? And you're wandering through what we call space-time as a so-called, you know, cackling bacteria on the surface of what we refer to as Earth. This is a wonder field. Your eyes, your ears, your tongue, your touch, your taste, your penis, and your vagina, whether you have one or both or neither, are capable of... Are capable...
I don't like it, one of those.
We'd be bad.
All right, I might secretly want
to. I don't know. I've never gone to a non-duality talk before where eros and intercourse and sexual organs are just...
My subconscious is just coming out.
Really. Okay, everyone's supposed to sit there kind of prudishly, right?
Why not be a lending library?
Yeah.
Intellectual.
Look at the nature of present experience. I mean, try to be still. Try to be, you know, unafflicted. You can't. The energy, the pressure of so-called radiant presence is unabated and wild beyond imagination, and you can't turn it off, and you can't turn it on, and you can't turn it down, and you can't turn it higher. It's on 11. You're on 11.
I think that I have a certain attachment to being individuated from the imagination.
Rock and roll. You're welcome to it.
Hey, get off my cloud.
Yes, I hear you. Right.
I feel like you're popping to my head.
Hey, you get off of my cloud. That's right.
Hey, you. Oh, okay. Hey.
Hee-hee. Well, that's from Hee Haw. Yeah, that's it. You know, the Jed Clampett theme.
Okay, and there's a specialness in that.
Experiencing as a generic.
I kind of like my little imagination thing going on here, and I don't want you interfering with it.
Lisa, of course. Yeah. It's up to you, if it's up to you, it's not really true, whether you get more enjoyment out of individuation as contrasted with suffering from individuation.
You same way that it's up to you to get sober, and not, that's why you can't bully someone into it. Your interest has to be interested in getting sober or whatever it is.
That's right. If you're enjoying
the giant alien who says, okay, you know,
how to serve man,
we're gonna roll the dice.
Can I just have a little decaf?
Yeah.
I have never seen you be demure like that before.
Oh, I do it all the time, yeah. Like when I got pulled over the other day.
It just doesn't last.
What was I doing all this time? No, I didn't take, like, mass quantities of marijuana this morning.
Nice penis, officer.
Next time. Yeah. Listen, can we solve this right now? I just want to tell you I have a penis obsession. I don't know what I was doing wrong. I just thought that might be. I just thought that might be of your interest. I'm not sure.
You sure carrying your revolver down low? I'm sorry. Was I not wearing my seatbelt and talking on my cell phone? Oh my!
Did I mention I like penises?
So, did he let you go?
My own.
Question is. Did he let you go?
No, I got a. But I got.
She did. A minor.
Well, I got a $46.
Oh, okay.
No seatbelt ticket.
Oh, wow. $46 in Pennsylvania?
No, in Jersey.
Jersey, yeah.
Damn it.
The Hawks over there.
Yeah.
We are here. We all agree. Damn it, Jersey.
We're not in charge of the degree to which we are enamored of, hey, you get off of my cloud. As contrasted with, I gotta get out of here. We're just not in control of the impulse field of, let's just call it, the plasma-like nature of consciousness to be either pleased with, sanguine, coping with individuation, or the tipping point when consciousness says, I am so out of here. If I don't figure out how to get rid of this nuisance, I'm going to kill myself. I mean, if you go to people like Eckhart Tolle,
Well, it's like in the same way you have to individuate and claim your thoughts to be yours, because in the same way that I had no control over that police officer just bam showing up at the confluence of events was like so perfect. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any, you know what I mean? It was just like, blah, 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 check. And the same way with everything else. There's no...
Everything is right on cue.
Yeah,
and everything is going your way.
What is
So the alien, the giant alien guy.
The giant alien, yeah.
To, you know what? She really should be driving with a seatbelt, not talking on the phone, even if a friend didn't call her, and she shouldn't be.
No, it had nothing to do with, like, person stuff.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, that appear in your imagination.
It would have to appear in my imagination.
Giant alien guy dropping there.
Oh, if I felt that way.
Saying, this one's cruising around doing
you are completely under the influence of a parasite that you're not aware of, which brings you back to these meetings over and over again.
So maybe Scientology has a point.
Scientology does have a point.
At the end of the whole game, you've been cleared, and now you realize you are the alien. You've been infected by the alien.
Yeah, right. Very good.
They might be onto something.
Well, if you look at the, let's call it the thought leaders at the top of Scientology, who would profess to be clear of Thetanic influence.
No, Thetans are spirits. Like, you, if you are clear, you're a Thetan.
Then what?
As far as I understand it.
Ah. I may stand corrected. If you go to the elite of the Scientology pyramid, you tell me how clear they are.
They seem rather self-indulgent and greedy. I don't know.
Well, criminal comes to mind.
Someone tries to leave, and then see how they act.
Criminal comes to mind. Violating comes to mind. Greedy beyond imagination comes to mind. Incarcerating comes to mind. Privileged comes to mind.
Us and them.
Psychotic.
Us and them comes to mind.
Us and them.
Yeah.
Like the Pink Floyd song.
Yeah, you know what? Some of that stuff hits you too. These guys like processing this stuff in some way and came out in music.
So that means that the behavior of the organization of Scientology is the consequence of being either, let's say, clear, whether as a Thetan or the removal of unwanted parasitic impulses. Whatever it is, if that's what realization looks like at the top of Scientology, I'll pass. Petting peacocks walking around in a diaper. You know, I mean, I'll pass on that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I don't think
I'd
like a diaper.
It's whatever we. I get it.
Imagination.
I get it. No. This is so remarkably seductive, though it is unassailable, free beyond any possible imagination of free. Because of its very, very dense, highly pixelated, activized, and radiant, fractal, expressive nature, it turns into a story faster than you can say Thetan. And the hallucinatory nature of mind leaps on the story. Or you could say it is one with the story and then makes it appear as if you are bookended by birth-death, right? Traversing time-space, advantage-seeking. And it does so how quickly? Really quickly. Really, 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 really quickly it does this.
Lickety-split.
Lickety-split.
When you're in it, you don't know, which is just so weird.
That's right.
People at the top of the
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
four people at the bottom, you know.
Yeah.
Are at no advantage with the system.
No, there is no such thing.
There are folks out there.
Yeah.
And one of, you know, my evil nemesis comes to mind.
Right.
And I believe that to be at the bottom of the food chain is to somehow be more in touch with what's really going on. And I say that's as much as I say.
That's right, yeah.
As to be at the very top of the whole food chain. And the
yes.
Free person in the world, because the person at the bottom wants to be at the top. And the person at the top would like a little relief from that.
The prince and the pauper.
And everybody in between, so to speak.
Yeah.
Kind of put it like that, right? Right. Isn't there a story about the prince and the pauper?
They switched places.
Yeah, and they get to see what it's like on the other side of the...
Yeah.
What was that Eddie Murphy movie where they
trading places?
He was a prince and he worked at McDonald's.
You can still
get
cancer and
that was all
because look at, you know, the guy,
yeah. So what we're playing around with is you could look at the seductive, lovely, seductive nature of inhabiting stories and comparisons and relativisms as a way of occupying your so-called present experience. That just streams in, right? It just streams in. Stories and literature and movies and personal anecdotes from a less than optimal childhood, right? Comes streaming in instantaneously. What we're playing around with is just behind, just prior, nothing. There's no association, and yet you're still here, right? Being is still here. Attentivity is still present, but it's not full of anything.
So if we, like, turn the world around.
Let's.
And say, and stop people from, you know...
No, hang on. No. You're dreaming again. You're dreaming again. There's no people.
I could turn a religion into that.
Well, aren't you a religion of your own making? Isn't
absolutely.
Right, Jeff, Francine, Lisa, Pat, Dave, aren't we religions of our own making? Right? Aren't I at the top of the pyramid of the religion of me? Yes? Absolutely. So it's just like drop your robes. I'm not suggesting you wander around Doylestown naked, though that could be fun. We should all do that and hold hands.
Don't do it. Maybe not during the car show.
Not during the car show.
Oh, my God.
Drop your robes. Put down the religion of me. That's right. That's right. Feel yourself completely released from the religion of me.
That is like, that's freedom.
That's exactly what it used to be in your head.
Yep.
The squirrel mind. Remember the squirrel mind? The squirrel
mind. Yeah. Now, you know, Buddhists and others like them, or Patanjali and others like him.
I don't know who all these characters are.
It's not important. Will place too much and dare I say myopic attention on trying to be free from mind. I mean, entire schools of yoga, whether the Hindu, whether the Vedic, or whether the Vedic, or what's the other word for the Taoist, right? Whether the Vedic or the Taoist, or any place in between, will sometimes place way too much emphasis on being free from thought. There's no need to be free from thought.
It's like the same thing as trying to say, I'm going to be free from the police.
Free from
Good
the police.
Luck. They'll find you.
You see, because what happens is that the lockdown is, the myth of subjectivity remains, but now the myth of subjectivity is by virtue of yogic endeavor, contemplative endeavor, you know, jhanic endeavor, free from thought. Not happening. Not necessary. Thought is not an enemy. Nothing is actually an enemy. You can see through the genesis and myth of subjectivity, then whatever appears is truly not your concern. That's a, if I can be so bold, a little different vector, a little different curveball than imagining you're going to do something constructive with the myth of yourself. Don't bother to do anything constructive with the myth of yourself. That's why all the, right, hucksters that take your money thrive on your money. Don't do anything constructive with the myth of yourself. Boom. Just go right under the myth of yourself. No yoga, no meditation, no mindfulness, no ascended masters, no unicorns, no body work, no healing, no thetans, no the work, nothing. You do not need to subscribe to anything that has to do with advantage seeking, spiritually or otherwise, to the myth of yourself. That's a pretty low-cost approach to ascension.
What if the dance looks like this? I do all these things, and it brings me back to where I started. I had to do all those things to finally be at peace where I started.
Yes. That's right. That's the observation.
Yeah,
no matter how many of these things you do, no matter how many vows you take, no matter how clear you are, no matter how much money you've made at the top of some absurd pyramid, where are you going to come back? Right about here, right about now, to cope someday with the myth of yourself. Or not.
Yeah. It's a curveball. It's a vector.
Yeah.
So if you just enjoy the jokes, enjoy the...
No, this is not behavioral. You cannot choose or decide on how you are going to relate to your present experience, because that is another myth. That's another accoutrement. There's no solution, my dear, because nothing is actually happening in the first place that requires a solution or requires you to take on the optimal attitude. If you think you're taking on an optimal attitude, and I'm not singling you out, pretty much 7.something billion are in that game. If we think this is about taking on an optimal attitude, like from Carolyn Meese or Wayne Dyer or Deepak Chopra or whomever, you would be sorely mistaken. Though, of course, you are welcome to spend your money identifying and adopting that attitude with great success. This is not about what attitude to take. Because then you've created locus. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
Let's go and let God.
This is a recovery meeting.
Let go and let God is actually...
Let go and let God.
Let go and let God. Just let go.
What is fine?
Huh?
What's fine? The acronym?
What the insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
What is something appearing real? Something, what's that one they say?
That one I don't know.
In recovery?
There are some, like, if you look into each one of these sort of, you know, philosophy things, there's like little nuggets of truth that I think, or not truth, but helpful.
There's nuggets of truth on the rack.
Like, here you are, surrender.
That's a bit of a stretch.
It is a bit of a stretch.
We're spinning our face.
I like that one.
Big stretch.
For you, it's a big stretch.
Take one of Dave's puns.
There you are on the cross. I'm glad.
You could say your actual nature, which is saying too much, is not relativistic. Everything that appears in the permutation of so-called experience appears relativistically, or at least that's the way we say mind, whatever mind is, frames the apparitional nature of experience.
So these characters were really enlightened.
Which ones?
All the ones.
Rattled off.
Rattled off.
Yeah. Right. If.
And they just were sort of floating around in this space of
something or other.
Yeah.
Undifferentiated plasma.
An undifferentiated euphoric plasma.
There.
Yeah.
Starting a new relation. And
fantastic.
Yeah, I do believe that if you got to that state, nothing, like, it doesn't mean anything. Like, you would just be cutting a knife on your body.
All right. I hear you. No, because your own immediacy of effulgence is nourishing beyond measure. So what happens, what doesn't happen, where you are, where you're not, is of no consequence to you. Sure, you can fake it. Many have. John Travolta fakes it. Tom Cruise fakes it. I'm sorry to hear that.
He's leaving?
Scientology.
Uh-oh.
Maybe. Everyone fakes it. Barack Obama fakes it. Joel Osteen? Joel Osteen fakes it.
Barack Obama knows he's faking it and doesn't try to necessarily hide it.
Who knows?
I remember the acronym. So it's FEAR, false evidence appearing real.
Is that an ACIM thing? No? AA thing. Right. Nice, I like it. Yeah. Well, next time one of these enlightened folks come through, if we have the good pleasure of, you know, their company, just ask them. You can taunt them. You know, instead of going round and round about, you know, human-esque issues, absolutely flirt, cajole, get right in their face and say, I am tired of explanations and how-tos and all of that other fucking horseshit. Tell me to my face, what the fuck is your present experience? Get right in there. You're right. Place the demand.
Jack them up.
And they say, right, but there's no context to answer that question.
Let them figure it out. Place the demand on them and say, tell me, goddammit, I'm not interested in hypothetical horseshit about any fucking thing, including my crappy personality or my sorrow or my grief or my anger. Just tell me right now, goddammit, what is your present experience?
Yes.
Right?
We're good.
Thank you.
I think we're done.
Make the demand. Otherwise, you know, what are they going to do? They're just going to wrap you up in all kinds of fanciful, Rumi-esque horseshit.
Oh.
Which could turn out to be entertaining.
The,
and a hoot.
They don't have that thing anymore. That little thing.
But who cares about that? I mean, you know.
Who's your man?
You want something from God? Grab her by the throat and squeeze really tight until she gives you the goods. I mean, don't beg. Right? Don't beg.
Learn your way there.
You can't
be like a superhero of some sort. You know?
You have to mug God as a street criminal might to get what it is that you want.
I'm going, God. Damn it.
Yes. Otherwise, you're a beggar.
A world beggar.
That's right. If we're wandering through this as an unworthy beggar, an ashamed, self-accusatory, unworthy beggar, what do you think we're going to get? More of same.
Scraps.
So wrap your hands around her throat and demand.
She's Durga, I'm not sure. I can.
Well, the consequences could be lethal, but it's worth the attempt, right?
That's kind of what I was thinking about that, like the secrets of wealth, like how that is very, it is common, seemingly, like you were pointing out. And there is some truth to it, but the truth is not in manifesting fucking what you think you want or whatever, you know? But like what you were just saying, that...
Wrap your hands around Durga's throat at the risk of death and demand what it is that you want.
That is exactly what you want.
Yeah.
There's my hand.
Otherwise, all of these clever, enlightened fuckers will wiggle free and just espouse all kinds of heretical horseshit for you to feel better about yourself. But who cares about that?
Every time that you sort of want something, they sort of have like a tiny bit of, you know, a nugget of.